Blog Talk Radio. Everyone, good evening. I'm Kay Thompson, and welcome to Kay and Gus Show here on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to listen to us, all you have to do is go to blogtalkradio.com, and then you type in the K, that's K-A-E, and then type out the and, A-N-D, Gus Show. And we welcome you to listen every Wednesday from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. as we take a closer look at exciting news, information, education, and global communication issues. I'd like to say that we are broadcasting, or as I call it, broadcasting. And so that means that we are heard all over. It's not only local and national, but wow, it's international and global. That's hot stuff. I know. Good Lord. Anyway, we have a show today that you are not going to be able to put the phone down. Let me give you the numbers for you to call, and the calling numbers just in case you want them, because you can, use these numbers to call and get involved with this program. It's 323-679-0906. The number for you to call in is 323-679-0906. Now, the show is live, and you can actually, participate with your questions or comments by calling that number, just to give you an idea of some of the hot topics and issues we have talked to in past stories. We've talked to Gus Hedinburg, who is, of course, the co-host here on A Close Look with Gus Hedinburg. He is listening in and he is recouping. So hello, Gus. Hope you're feeling well. And I will talk to you later on this evening. We have a hot topic for today and some wonderful guests. And I'd like to say hello to my good buddy, Milagros Harris, Millie Harris. And Millie is a social studies and the lead teacher for Social Justice Academy over there at Central High School in Newark, New Jersey. Teacher extraordinaire. You are extraordinary.
Well, thank you, darling.
Well, I'm talking to the mic there. You know.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad to be here. It's always a pleasure to have the opportunity to come in and see you.
Yeah.
In regards to Gus, how are you doing, Gus?
He's listening in.
Hopefully we'll have another exciting show. We usually have a good time.
Yeah. And also, Millie, you were the first person that we ever interviewed on the show. And we have been doing, we have like about 38 shows.
Wow.
In the can. We've been on the air since last June.
And I was the first.
You were the first. And you were part of our, Speakeasy segment. That's Lisa's favorite segment.
That's right.
We talked to self-published authors. And the name of your book was Secrets of the
Tales from the Underground
Tales
Diva
of
Lounge.
Tales of the Underground Diva Lounge. Right. And we read the book, and the book was so hilarious, even Gus is laughing. As a matter of fact, all of us, Shauna and Ayana and Gus and Ty, everybody was laughing. We could barely keep ourselves together. The book is hilarious, especially that one area that you read.
The infamous midget story.
Yeah, I want you to move.
I'm not going to tell it again, though. I promise.
Listen, you may have to. But what I want to do is I want to also introduce, three gentlemen who are here. Rahman Muhammad. And how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for having me. I'd like to say hi to Gus also.
Okay. And glad to have you.
Yeah,
I've been hearing a lot about you all,
Thank you.
And also Rashid Pryor. Rashid, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
No,
also from the Akbar Foundation, and we're going to find out all about what the foundation is. And Qasim, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Qasim.
Qasim Abdul Karim Pren.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, Millie, you have started an absolutely fantastic program over there at Central High School. Central High School is in?
Central High School in Newark. We started a social justice academy. We're in our second year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting program where, the program is essentially tailored to the needs of the kids and their interests. Basically, you know, what we're looking for, our goals are identity development and an understanding of the social justice system, and presently really looking a lot at the criminal justice system, because of a lot of our young people are finding themselves involved with the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. So they need some guidance to maneuver and hopefully avoid.
Yeah. And they have some real problems, I would imagine, with are some of them, do they have special problems because maybe some of their parents might be incarcerated, or maybe they've been incarcerated? And exactly what can be done, you know, to help them with different programs?
Well,
I know that's a loaded question, but...
Yeah, that's a very loaded question. Well, initially we started looking at issues of mass incarceration, mm-hmm. because we do have a lot of children whose parents are imprisoned or have been imprisoned, and there have been some serious ramifications, you know, in their own lives. And so now, lately, the direction that we are taking is looking into violence in the community, uh-huh. as a political social issue, and also looking at the school to prison pipeline, mm-hmm. that is really affecting our children very adversely, and the institutional racism that keeps this thing going.
Oh, you mean to tell me that institutional racism still exists?
Oh, my goodness. Who knew? Yeah, very much so.
Listen, I used to teach in Newark, and I understood the whole system. And, well, anyway, that's another story.
Right.
But, you know, I want to find out more about the Akbar Foundation and Rahman. I wonder if you can tell us about that. As a matter of fact, let me say this. When you have something to say, just take the mic and, you know, join in, because this is a conversation. Don't let me lead it all. You know, I'll guide it. So,
the Akbar Foundation for Change, exactly what is how it sounds. Akbar is a man that is very interested and concerned about our youth today. And he wants to bring about a change.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to bring about a solution for that change. So the panel that you see here, we're here to help try to implement that change. And that change is for the benefit. And his purpose, one of his many purposes, is to be able to save our children, to save our children from the destructions that society is putting in front of them in terms of crime, in terms mm-hmm. of all the social injustices that the children are going through today. So these are some of the things that we want to try to do, is to try to help educate and make that change.
Sounds great. Now, you're saying he. Mm-hmm. Now, who is Akbar and where is he?
Well, Akbar is a general. He presently right now is incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he's someone who has this vision in terms of Akbar's Foundation for Change. He is someone that is incarcerated, but he's someone also that feels the need, and he feels the hurt that our youth is going through today.
Mm.
So he is the reason why we're here, to try to help to implement that change.
Oh, okay, I see. Now we have 2 minutes, and then we're going to go for a break. But during that time, Kwasim, would you tell us what is your role with the foundation?
Well, I'm just the helping hand, and somebody who's willing to do what I can to address the problem that's in front of all of us,
mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like our youth and my future, as well as yours,
yeah,
is at risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And whatever we can do to prevent them, one of the things that Akbar says, that he wants to get his message across while they're in school, before they end up where he is.
I see. I see.
He's been incarcerated like the past 23 years.
Wow.
And, mm-hmm. you know, he's...
For what specifically?
Well, he was, I think, the second or third person convicted under the Super Kingpin statute.
Mm-hmm.
His conviction was mostly as a result of a lifestyle,
uh-huh.
that you know, he was, in my estimation, because there was no, you know, he wasn't convicted of he wasn't guilty of possession of any drugs or weapons or anything,
mm-hmm.
like, but he had acquired assets that the government felt as though
Okay. What we're going to be doing, we're going to be taking a break, and we're going to come right back to you.
Okay.
And, you know, tell us, you know, how you got involved and all that sort of stuff, and then you, Rashi. Okay, and just pick up the mic and, you know, go with it. Okay, make sure you still... And say anything you want to say. You know, if you want to send a message to him, would he be able to be listening in? Is that it or what?
Yeah, we could probably get a message to him at some point.
Going for a break, and we will be right back. Stay with us, everybody.
Tomorrow may never show up. So you can be the size of not a problem. I ain't no perfect man. I'm trying to do the best that I can with what I have. I ain't no perfect man, I'm trying to do the best that I can with what it is I have. Put my heart and soul to the song. I hope you feel me. Where I am, wherever you are. I mean that sincerely. Tomorrow may never come. For you and me, life is not a problem. Tomorrow may never be. You better hold this very moment very close to you right now. Very close to you right now. So close to you right now. Don't be afraid. Set it aside. Shine your light on the world. Shine your light for the world to see. My heart is set. Shine your light on the world. Shine your light for the world to see. My heart is set. Shine your light on the world. Shine your light for the world to see. I look around and things are so weak. People are so weak. Sometimes I feel like I am. Sometimes my heart gets heavy. Sometimes I just want to leave and run away. Sometimes I don't know what to do myself. Passion takes over me. Feel like a man. Put my heart and soul into the shore. Feel me where I am. Sometimes I don't want to be bothered. Sometimes I just want a quiet life. Me and my baby, me and my lady. Sometimes I don't want to get in the snowfall. Sometimes I don't want to be so happy. Sometimes I just want to be a man.
Three, four, five, six. Everyone, I'm Kay Thompson, and Gus Henningberg is listening in, and this is the Kay and Gus Show. And you know what we do? We try to give from a race, or from the context of race, we like to talk about hot button issues and issues that are unique to our community and issues that we need for everybody else to hear about and share and be aware of. And, you know, we are broadcasting, I like to say blogcasting, here in Jersey City, And the company that we are broadcasting or broadcasting from is BW Moving Images. And BW Moving Images is located in Jersey City, right across the pond, a little bit from New York, right across from the Big Apple, from Manhattan, where everything is going on and things are still moving about, you know, with the people back down at Wall Street. Wall Streeters are down,
yep,
you know, back there. The gates and everything have been moved apart, and we're going to find out exactly what's going on with that. But, Kasim, let me get back to you now. You know, you were talking about the Akbar Foundation. How did you happen to become involved?
Well, first of all, I was kind of born into this. I am Akbar's uncle.
Ah, okay.
I'm his mother's baby brother.
Uh-huh.
Akbar and I are like 2 years and 10 months apart,
uh-huh.
So we're more like brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we share a lot, and so I didn't have a choice in the matter.
Mm-hmm. But when he went, and he is now incarcerated, right?
Yes.
Now you were saying that he was incarcerated for what specifically, or can you say or not say?
Allegedly.
Well, he's for allegedly violating the ECO statutes as pertains to the drug enterprise.
Okay, okay. The drug trade, in other words.
Right.
Okay, okay. Can you explain to me what the RICO, you know?
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
He's a local, he's like one of Newark's own,
mm-hmm.
You know, he's known and respected, we call street cred. And the message that he brings, I think, is especially effective coming from him because
he can talk to the young people.
He can talk
to
the young people. And I hope that at some time in the future, you'll be able to
talk to him in the audience. We would love to. We could love to
speak to him or air the, you know, the CD that I brought you.
Sure, sure.
You know, I'm sure that your audience would appreciate the
okay, and I'm right now inviting you back even before we finish the show, okay, because I know you have a lot to say.
And I'm already excited.
Okay. Terrific. And now, God, wait a minute, don't tell me. Rashid.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, now, you're the young baby.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So how did you get involved with the Akbar Foundation?
Well, actually, I was just recently on release from prison.
Uh-huh.
After doing 8 years in prison. I've been homecoming now 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and I came a part of the foundation through Akbar himself. I was actually incarcerated with Akbar for for the last 15 months of my sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So I was granted the opportunity to actually talk to him and understood. Basically, I just wanted to be a part of what he was pushing out because, I mean, being from the streets of Newark, you know, and coming up, it was all I used to hear was like Akbar pray, Akbar pray. So it was kind of like, you know, for me coming up, he was kind of like a mythical figure, almost. So then for me to go to prison and get the opportunity to actually meet him,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, all the things I heard about him were always good. And then to actually meet him and see, you know, what he's pushing for, and, you know, being as a youth that was coming up in the streets, you know,
mm-hmm.
and to see that it's actually somebody that you once looked up to that's really trying to bring forth change,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a part of that.
And you admired that.
Yes,
why are you incarcerated in the first place?
I mean, kind of similar, the same thing, basically, you know what I'm saying?
Drugs.
I had a big drug case,
mm-hmm.
a conspiracy, you know, with a few of us. I actually have friends now that are incarcerated, going to be incarcerated for the rest of their lives, you know, and I mean, I only did 8 years off of 10 years.
Only?
Yes.
That's a long time.
It is.
How do
you
like?
You know, when I'm, being that I just was released from prison, I was around people that we know been incarcerated for the past 20 years, the past 30 years, and got life sentence, 2 life sentences, 3 life sentences. I feel as though my time was like a smack on the wrist.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in being around those type of people, I started to realize, you know, that I'm given another chance. And so these are the things, a lot of the things that the foundation brings, a lot of things that me and Akbar talked about, being that we spent the track together. We talked to each other on a daily basis. You know, from the same background.
So you have changed your life around, and now you want to help the kids
who,
you know, may be involved with this stuff.
Yes.
All right, now let me ask you a loaded question here.
No problem.
Now, you're from Newark, or you're from out
ma'am.
Of Newark?
No,
okay.
I'm from Newark.
Now, we all have an idea that drugs are rampant in Newark. Am I right?
Yes,
okay. Now, were you coerced into getting it and getting involved with drugs, or did you do it because of the fact that it was big money and easy money, or were you addicted or what? Tell
nah,
us.
I mean, for the most part, I wasn't coerced.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, growing up in the inner city, not just knowing any inner city, you know, you're subject to certain things, and I saw certain things.
And your friends around you were doing
it? Yeah,
okay.
not mm-hmm. just that. I mean, just any kid growing up, especially, I see it more this time, you know, kids are looking for tangible things. And the thing is, like, you know, when they say something about role models, a lot of the role models, they are intangible. You can't connect with
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me to see certain things coming up, like the guys on the corner, the local guys, and I could go to them if I ain't got, I could go to them. They could perhaps give me something that can
yeah.
help me through the course of my day.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? This is something that I took a liking to myself as a child. So me coming up and seeing that how we can interact with these guys on the corner and not the people that's playing, you know, the sports or whatever.
Yeah.
We can't get in contact with them. I can get in contact with this guy that's
yeah.
standing on the corner of my building every day.
Mm-hmm.
So this was something, you know what I mean? It kind of, you know, towards the, you know, a young mind is easy to mold. So
sure.
it kind of enticed me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I took, I wasn't coerced. It just actually something that I wanted to do at that time.
At that time.
Because it was like a part of being at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I wanted to be a part of.
So now you're involved with, you know, the Akbar Foundation.
Yes,
the Akbar Foundation is set up to help youth
yes.
and whatnot.
Huh.
But aren't there, I mean, the United States is overrun with drugs. How do,
yes.
well, you know, how do our kids have a chance? Let's face it, yes. you know. And then you also have, you know, African-American kids arrested
yeah.
more than any others, you
yeah.
know that, given
yeah.
longer sentences
mm-hmm.
than anybody else.
Yeah.
We're like the fodder for the cannon,
yeah. Yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
it's just not fair. And then, and yet you get it, you know, some of the white kids, you get a slap on the
mm-hmm.
wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a whole, let's face it, the jails are big businesses.
Yes, man.
You know, and who's in the jail? Who's the fodder?
African-American kids.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I have some statistics from the ACLU
mm-hmm.
that says that while African-American youth are only 16% of the juvenile population, they make up 45% of juveniles
wow.
in prison.
Mm.
So, but there's a lot of factors involved in that. If you look at the direction that education is going these days, where everything is data-driven, test-driven, a lot of this may have
mm-hmm.
something to do with that too, because this idea of this school-to-prison pipeline, you know, kids aren't just getting suspended anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now you actually have law enforcement in these buildings. And school is so data driven that it's really dehumanized education to the point where you're not really teaching children, you're teaching to produce data.
Yeah.
And if you have students that are special needs, and again, African American young people are disproportionately placed in special needs classes.
Mm-hmm.
If you have students that are special needs or students that are low performers, it behooves a school to put them out.
Yeah, yeah.
In order to increase their test scores.
Uh-huh.
Because test
wow,
scores
wow.
equal
yeah.
money.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
then on the other hand, low test scores equal more money for communities like inner city communities that are getting a lot of extra funding to continue to perpetuate this cycle.
You know, I want you all to get involved in this. Don't wait for me to say,
okay.
you know, Rashid,
yeah.
you know, just go ahead and talk.
I would like just to say, well, like, in reference to the example that Akmon just gave, you know, in terms of the heroes that's inside of the community, this is one of the things that we want to do with the foundation. We want to replace those negative heroes.
Yeah.
We, you know, we feel that people like ourselves, people like Akmon, people like Akbar, you know, we need to speak to these so-called heroes that are out there that our kids are idolizing. They're idolizing drive-bys.
Yeah,
right.
People who commit murder and killing. People who kill little kids by accident or even maybe intentionally. We want to replace this mentality with a new mentality. We want to be able to get to these people. We want to be able to talk to them. We want to be able to change their way of thinking and try to bring a new way of thinking to the youth. You want
uh-huh.
to put some value in their mind.
I want to know how you're going about this, and I want to give the number for people to call. The number is 323-679-0906. It's 323-679-0906. And when we come back, we're going to find out more about the Akbar Foundation. And Gus, if you're listening in, I know you're very proud of the subject that we've chosen today. And we just want to say that, you know, Gus, chair of the New Jersey Educational Opportunity Fund for educational educationally and economically disadvantaged too, by the way. And there's scholarships available, so we want to give that information out too, okay? And we're going to go for a break right now, and we will be right back with more. Listen to the music. I don't know what's on right now, but it shows specifically for our show. And we have a caller on the line, so when we come back, we're going to take that call. Stay with us.
Oh, sugar, when you're close to me, you love me right down to my knees. And yeah, whenever you let me hit it, sweet like honey when it comes to me. Skin is caramel with the cocoa eyes. Even got a big sister by the name of Chocolate. Brown sugar, babe. I get high off the love, don't know how to behave.
Okay, everyone, we are back. I'm Kay Thompson. Gus Henneberg is listening in. Hi, Gus. And I'm going to be talking to you later on to see if you have approved, if the approval is in for the show. He's recouping and he is listening in. And here in the studio, once again, is Millie Harris, who is a friend of mine from years and years and years and years. Not that many years. And Millie's the lead teacher, you know, for the social justice. How in the world did you do that?
Well,
oh, we want to go to the caller first. I'm sorry, I forgot about that. You're on the air. Hello. We'll come right back to Millie. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a question for, this is a very interesting topic about the prison industrial complex, because I feel like although there are a lot of community-based organizations that are always organizing around this, I don't hear anything about what local officials are doing or politicians are doing to stem the flow of obviously, you know, like black people that are being funneled into the prison system. And I just wanted to know if anybody knows of any political activity around the fact that there's such a disparate amount of black people who are in jail versus other ethnicities.
This is a very interesting concern that you have. Is the same concern that we have here for the Akhbat change. I think she's basically trying to say that, you know, all the statistics that's going on about people being incarcerated, okay, or what are the people who can make these changes in terms of the politicians?
What are they doing?
What are they doing? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the level or the process that we need to be trying to hit, because we've always beaten up verbally on the youth.
Yeah.
I think that we need to go to what is the cause of the problem or the solution to the problem. And the solutions is in the high up. It's in the city halls.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to try to get to them.
In other words, you're saying that they're not doing what they should be doing, period.
We're talking
about city council in Newark and probably city council of all the state of New Jersey.
Exactly.
Let's try from the governor's office.
I think these this issue was very well explored in the book, The New Jim Crow.
Right.
What's the author's name?
Michelle Alexander.
By Michelle Alexander. And I don't know that if it's possible to do enough. It's an ugly situation. This pipeline that feeds itself, and the economic benefits
from school to jail,
and the economic benefits that are being derived. You know, a lot of people making a lot of money, from incarceration.
Yeah, on the lives of our youth, right.
I think one of the things that we have to look at, the issue of mass incarceration needs to be addressed really in terms of a civil rights issue. We're not really looking at it the way that it should be. I mean, it has become the new form of slavery. When you begin to think about the money that's being generated by the 2.2 million prisoners that are in our state and federal system at any given moment, and that's only the people that are presently incarcerated, not the ones that are on waiting to go in,
right.
Or at any given moment.
What
there are actually
again?
There's 2.2 million people at any given day that are incarcerated, but actually the numbers are more closer to 32 million people involved in the criminal justice system.
And I had and unfortunately I had the luxury but I experienced both the state and the federal system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because prior to my federal sentence that I served, I was just released from state prison. And prior to that, I had already done 2 state prison terms. So I'm kind of familiar with both of the systems. And one of the things that I learned while I was in prison, just from, you know, being around and seeing how everything is, if prison doesn't, you know, it's supposed to be rehabilitation. And for what I have experienced while in prison, the rehabilitation starts within yourself. It has really nothing to do with prison, because what prison really does, from what I've seen, what I experienced, is like a stockhouse.
Mm-hmm.
for us. And it stockhouse, like, you know, a lot of us, you know, we do bad behavior. So they say it's a stockhouse for criminals, but mainly it's a stockhouse for us, is, you know, black men, you know, just people that are minority.
Right.
So, and a lot of times when we get in these prisons, they take a lot of things away from us. You know, they lack the education for people that may need it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that they lack the job training and stuff like this. So when you release back into society, it's like you just drop right back to where you might have caught the same
right
case
when
that.
You left off.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so it's like you know, if somebody sees you, it's like, you know, you never missed a beat.
Yeah, so it's like a revolving
that's
door
all it
and
is.
Set up that way.
And this is how it's set up. And, you know, it's sad, you know. But like I said, this trip right here, when I came through the federal system, I was given the opportunity to meet Akbar. And this was something that he's stressing right now. The fact that prison is a revolving door, and it starts for us at first and on these streets of where we're from. Because like I mentioned earlier, like, you know, we look up to the people that are around us.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
the ones that are on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Not the ones that are, you know, nowhere else. We're right mm-hmm. there where we can see. We deal with them daily. You know, like maybe our parents may be at work because they're trying to support us.
Yeah.
So when we outside, you know, I know when I was growing up, my mother worked 2 jobs. So it was never a time where as though she couldn't be with us in the house as much as she wanted to, probably because she was trying to provide
yeah.
for us. So a lot of the times we was outside. And during the time when I was growing up, you know, because I'm younger than the 2 brothers here. So during the time I was growing up, you could be outside all day, but the neighborhood would watch you.
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
I'm outside, I'm all right until my mother come home, because we just running around and playing. But the thing that we're seeing when we run around and playing is, you know, the guys here standing on the corner. You know, the guys
just
that
waiting.
Right, they sending us to the store.
Yeah.
All these things for me was like an introduction for me to start running the streets.
Yeah.
You know, going to the store for guys. They're giving me certain amounts of money. I'm just going to the store, buying whatever. I'm keeping the change. All this stuff was like an introduction.
So it was an easy thing for you to go from,
yeah, it was,
you know,
the transition.
The transition
for me was easy, because
mm-hmm.
It's the same area I grew up in is where, you know, the same area that I take apart and actually destroying.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easy for me. I knew everyone around me. So it wasn't nothing foreign about it to me.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't nothing foreign about it.
Are you going around to schools
yes.
and to organizations?
Yes.
What's the reception like, Millie? Do you know?
Well, it's been very
and churches.
We're
building toward that.
We will go wherever
uh-huh.
we are invited,
mm-hmm.
or anybody who will open the door for us.
All right, then how can people get in touch with you?
Well, the best way to get in touch with us right now would be probably via email,
mm-hmm. or
here through the radio station.
Yeah, yeah.
Directly through the radio station, you can call or leave messages for us here, and they'll be forwarded to us. We're in the process of developing a website.
Uh huh.
You can always reach me through my email, and I'll give you that at the end of the show.
Okay. And also, BW Moving Images Studio is on 280 First Street, everyone, Jersey City 07302. So just in case you wanted to get to us, you can get to BW Moving Images Studio, 280 First Street, Jersey City, New Jersey, 07302. What you are doing is so important.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, because when you think of the millions of young black males and older males incarcerated and really who shouldn't be there,
mm-hmm.
because
right.
of no fault of their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's criminal because it is big business.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's like a slave compound.
It has become the new slavery.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to address something, because, you know, we talk about the people who become our heroes because they're there and you
yeah.
see the wealth. But, you know, we are a material culture, and our kids are constantly bombarded with material culture. And, you know, kids want. That's what kids do by nature.
Right.
And parents try to provide. And when parents can't provide, kids try to find a way for themselves. But, you know, there are no jobs in our community anymore. And that's a big factor. Our kids, what are we preparing them for? First of all, everybody's not college material. Yeah. Everybody can delay earning potential for four more years. People need jobs today.
And so, kids go out in the street and they find a rich learning, some learning materials right out there on the street.
Right out there in the street.
It may, and it's negative, but the point is, you know, when you need something and you're not eating and you...
And you want the things that everybody else seems to have, and that provides a vehicle for you.
Right.
And it's in your environment and it's your relatives and the people that you know and admire. Well, then what else is there for these kids? These young Black men, believe me, they are not well received when they go to McDonald's for a job or Dunkin' Donuts for a job. These are not the face that these companies want up front at their at their counters. These kids can't even get those jobs.
There's another reality, and that reality was very well articulated about 10 years ago in the book called Game is Dead.
Game is Dead?
By Akbar Prey.
Akbar Prey wrote the book.
And
The Game is Dead.
It points out the reality that, you know, like this drug game is a trap. You know, like there's no longevity. There's no, you know, like happily ever after. You know, like, you know, anybody could get a package today and make a little money for a little while.
Go and sell.
But there is no future in it because, you know, like the end, you know, was jails, institutions, or death. You know, there's no good outcome. And anybody who has even achieved any measure of success in this game, if they had a chance or another option, they were taking another option because,
if
you know,
they have, what you just said is extremely important. If they had a chance to take another option. And if these kids are in school, they, why in the world don't they have those chances? That's the whole thing. Why in the world do they go to school and they'll meet, you know, kids who are, you know, selling in school?
Well, the thing about
gangs
it is, I mean,
in schools,
what
you know,
opportunities do they really have?
But how do you get beyond that? How do you get, you know, beyond that?
Well, hopefully,
how do you get the kids
through it? We can get another thought on our minds.
Well, kids need mentoring.
Yeah.
Kids need guidance. Yeah. I've always said it doesn't matter if your mother's a crackhead or a corporate executive. If your mother is not home because she has to be out there doing something,
working,
to hustle a living to support a family, then you don't have that guidance. You don't have that nurturing. If your father's not around, and many of our children are being brought up in single parent households, then who's there to teach a young man how to be a man? You know, I'm a single mother. I have three children. I have a son. It hasn't been easy for me to be a role model for him. You know, so our kids need role models, and that's the goal of the Akbar Prey Foundation for Change, is to provide mentors, to provide role models, to provide people who've had these experiences and can tell these kids from that honest experience. One thing about kids, and inner city kids in particular, they are skeptical. They're not going to take information from everybody. First, you have to earn their respect.
You know, in light of what Lily just said about the parents, that's part of the problem. Right now, the streets are becoming the parents.
You know,
years ago, it was your parents who taught you what was right and what was wrong and what was indifferent. Nowadays, the streets become the mother and the judge becomes the father. So that's the pattern that these kids are going through right now. It's not so much of the school. The school is part of the solution. But then when they leave the schools, they go back to a war zone.
What else? Right.
They go right back to a war zone.
Do you think that, say, for instance, with the kids in school, are the schools meeting their needs in learning what they want to learn? Think about that question. We have a minute now to break, but think about that, because I maintain really that I think testing is a waste of time these days.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to sit down and talk to the kids. If I sit down and talk to them, what do you want to do? He may be 7 or 8. Listen, I've taught junior high school kids, worst kids in the world. I'm telling you, junior high school middle kids. Yeah. I had to put my own daughter out of the car one day. She was junior high school kids. I said, I love you, but I don't like you right now. Get out more of school. But anyway, we'll be right back with more. We have to find out how we get to them. I don't think we respect the kids,
right,
you know, like we
Absolutely.
Should. They are sharp and they want to learn, but they need that guidance and they need, you know, gentlemen like you gentlemen. We'll be right back. Stay with us, everyone.
When you had him, when you treated him, now I found him, and I'm feeding him, and he's happy, there's no drama, so you can see those hot notes for the offer, cause I ain't giving him up, I'm loving him up, he ain't in every night, drinking from the same cup, they say you don't know a good thing till it's all wrong, and now I've landed in my heart,
like 1, 2, back up,
everyone, Kay Thompson here. Gus Henningberg is listening, and this is the Kay and Gus Show. We are a closer look. We take a closer look at various issues and hot topics. But listen, I just want to tell you something. I told you I had a surprise for you, right? I just happened to have talked to a friend of mine, and I told him that I had the original African Heritage Bible tapes. I just came, you know, people will give you things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this was brought to New York. As a matter of fact, actually, when it was presented to a lot of the scholars, this person experienced a whole lot of resistance from Black history scholars. It was the original origin of the Bible is written in the original languages of Egyptian, Aramaic, Phoenician, Hebrew, and Ge'ez. Okay. Also, it was written about so many different languages in the original languages before it was translated into English. And I was fascinated with it when I first saw it. And it was incredible. There are interviews with a number of people that I can give you the names of that I was amazed to see on this tape. And it's a presentation of the African influence of the presentation of the original African Heritage Study Bible. It's amazing. And I can't say where I got it from, but I didn't see it. It's the history of Africa prior to slavery. The history of Africa prior to slavery. I've interviewed Dr. Ben on a number of occasions. And I remember the first interview that I had with Dr. Yosef Ben-Yekinen. Yosef Ben-Yekinen, yes, that's the correct pronunciation, because he told me. His name is Yosef Ben-Yekinen. It's spelled J-O-C-H-A-N-N-O-N, but it's not Jochanan, Yekinen. And one of the most fascinating interviews I've ever had, and that was in 1970-something. And he told me, he was the first one who told me about the Black Madonna and about the the 16 stories of the Immaculate Conception, and about Isis and Horus. And he told me that the Pope in Rome goes to pray at the feet of the Black Madonna every single year. And I'm like this. And all of a sudden, after, you know, we started having Dr. Ben on. Now, I have to say, I did get Dr. Ben from Bill Noble's show.
Okay.
And we all need to pray for Bill, by the way.
Absolutely.
But anyway, and when Dr. Ben told me about the Black Madonna and the Black Jesus, I remember that it was about a month after that this started getting around, because it was on several shows. And all of a sudden, you saw Black churches, you know, they were, the faces of white Jesus was disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know in my own church, I'm not going to mention it, but Elizabeth, New Jersey, the faces changed to no faces. But really interesting stuff. And the original Bible, I'm telling you, it's amazing. But the stuff that Dr. Ben had to say, and I have the interviews. I have part one and part two with Dr. Ben. And also, Gus and I have an interview with he and Bill Noble. The only interview in existence of the two of them talking about the election when Jesse Jackson first ran for the president.
Okay, so when and how do we get the opportunity?
Not yet. But we are preparing them for, you know, the website, and we'll let people see them, because some of them go back to 1970, early 70s. You know, I was down at the March on Washington. You know that, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
You were a little girl.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But anyway, so back in 30 seconds. Okay, we will be back in 30 seconds. Is that it or what? The number, okay, so we have still have time. 323-679-0906, 323-679-0906. Also came about a lot of information about Malcolm X, that I can't say where I got it either. But, you know, when you start doing research, you get a lot of information. I remember seeing Malcolm X when he went to Rutgers University. The Rutgers University had a, they were using this school on Broadway in Newark. And I remember all big hoopla about Malcolm X, you know, I did him on television and whatnot. And I was fascinated because he spoke at that school, at their extra school, and the place was absolutely packed. And I was mesmerized, absolutely mesmerized. So, yes, I'm that old.
Well, you know what? Hopefully,
yes,
one...
he was in Newark, I'm telling you, at Broadway in Newark, I was there.
One day, when we can get Akbar on the phone,
uh-huh,
then he can tell you about going to the Teresa Hotel and literally sitting at Malcolm's feet. And listening and following him, and then bringing that back to Newark in its nascent stage.
And
here.
And my son Eric was in the film, and he played one of Malcolm's guards. You know? And Eric said when Denzel was speaking in the mosque, he said it was like Denzel took on the persona of Malcolm, and Denzel, what's his name?
Washington.
Mm-hmm. Told them, some of his friends, that he felt as if Malcolm had taken over him. And he felt, he really felt Malcolm inside. Malcolm. That's why he sounded so much like
him. Yes, he did. Wonderful.
I'm telling you, really, really. So, anyway.
And just on that note, then, when you're talking about people like Malcolm, it's like what we were saying earlier about role models.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, whether you agree with Malcolm's religious beliefs or... The one thing you had to recognize in the 60s and the 70s that those, the men that walked with those bow ties, they had morality.
Oh, yes.
They were men. They spoke against all the social ills of society.
Yep.
They encouraged their children to live a moral and upbeat life. This is what has disappeared now.
Yeah.
And this is what we must try to pressure from the parents to City Hall. Let's bring back those positive role models for our children. Because
and those really, positive standards and rules and regulations
exactly.
are so important.
It's so important. Mm-hmm.
And not only, may I add, not only respect for the children and families, but also the respect for women that you no longer see today, because I am in the high schools and I see how children talk to each other and women were very respected,
very respected in
the early years of as well.
And even when you think about the so-called with the gangs that they have today, but when you look at in the 60s and 70s, you know, society, some of the media might have called the Black Panthers like a gang, but they had a positive image also. Mm-hmm. Their thinking was not to come and destroy their community. It was to come to try to uplift their community.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to feed the community. Just imagine if the Bloods and the Crips decided to say, we're going to stop killing one another.
Wow.
And we're going to protect our community.
That would be so powerful.
Because they have they're looked up to. Right. They're respected. So then just imagine if the people who come under them and say, okay, fine, we're going to follow their lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be able to direct a positive way.
You know, in the classroom, I use some of Akbar's writings. He has an anthology of writings, and among them is a open letter to the Bloods and the Crips, where he talks about the values that are the core values of these organizations that young people no longer even know what the acronyms stand for.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, in the community, these people should be looked up to as people who protect the community and not who prey on the community.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a very, very salient message when the kids hear it and really hear for the first time for many of them what these organizations, how they originated.
Now, Millie, if somebody out there is listening and they want to get in touch with you or with the organization, because I'm quite sure you all are doing some motivation speaking now and speaking to the kids, you know, and which is so, so necessary. How can I get in touch?
Okay. Right now, we have a website that's being built.
Mm-hmm.
So probably the best way to get in touch would be directly to get in touch through me.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you again, I will give you my email address.
Okay.
That would be the best way. And it's my personal email. I don't mind putting out it out there because I think it's very important that we get this message to the kids. And the fact that, you know, we have men here, real men who are willing to go out and mentor and support these children. And not only the children, but families.
And we have to support them in doing it.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Before we went off the air, you were talking about, you know, kids' learning goals and how kids' learning goals are not really being respected.
I just
wanted to say that, you know, where I teach at Central, we have a motto. We say we teach children, not content.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so we try really to teach to the whole child. And I think it takes people from the community with a love for the people to really reach out. There are many of us who are giving way above and beyond.
Okay. Thank you so much. And you're going to come back and come back.
Because
we haven't even
even touched it,
really. So, who knows? Maybe we can start this movement,
you know,
and have it all around. Because this is going to be... When people listen into, when you go to Blog Talk Radio and you write it up, the K and Gus show, that's K-A-E and spell out A-N-D and G-U-S show, you can listen to any of our shows. They're up. They're on my Facebook page under K Thompson, K-A-E, and you can listen to them at any time.
Right.
So all you have to do is go to that. And again, there's so many other topics that we've talked about. And, you know, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, and you're going to be back again, and I'm tickled about that. And I'm going to be mentioning the date before we leave. Okay. Thank you so much. Kay Thompson here. And Gus, we'll talk to you later on. Thanks, Shauna. Thanks, Mariana. Thanks, Tai 1, Tai 2, Tai 3, Tai and his family here, Black Wax. Thanks, Lisa. Lisa Payne. And we will see you again next week for the Kay and Gus Show. Just to get by.
anxious. Take a shizzle for cheesy and stay crunk. It's easy to pull a breezy, smoke trees and we stay drunk. Yo, our activism attacking the system. The blacks and Latins in prison. Numbers in prison. They dick the black and the vicious shit. And all they got is rapping to listen to. I let them know we listen to you. The love is unconditional. Even when the position is critical, when you're living is miserable, your position is typical. I ain't bullshitting you now. Why would I lie? Just to get by. Just to get by. Get fly. See, we gotta reach the stars. Not the ones between Venus and Mars. The ones to be reading the parts. The people get breast cancer. That seen it from larger Saturdays and the Sunday morning at the feet of the Father. They need something to rely on. They get high on the type of drugs. When all you really need is love.
Get by, just to get by. Just to get by, just to get by.
Can't sing like John Lennon. Imagine all the people watch. We rock like Paul McCartney from now until the last beat of the
rock. I woke up feeling brand new. I jumped up in my high, and my low, and my goal, and my goal. Just to stop smoking, stop drinking. I'm thinking, I'm thinking, I'm thinking, just to get by, just to get by.
Good man, good man,